A61, number 1B.
So the only critics we could have, really, is the critic, how do you know that Mrs. Eddy was right? And there we would have to answer in two ways. One way is that we trust that it was revelation. The ordinary person wouldn't accept that answer and say, how do you prove that? Everybody can come along and say, I had a revelation from God. How do you know it's a revelation from God? There are a lot that runs under the term revelation. It's nothing else but the subconscious that comes up, or the collective subconscious that comes up and is spoken out. But there are naturally other proofs which we cannot discuss here, namely that we can see today, after we have studied the seventh synonymous term on that axiom, that the findings are consistent, very consistent, with other findings in the whole world. But I don't want to go further than that. All right. So, what we want to do is to be very disciplined in seeing that we are not projecting into the textbook our sense of the synonymous terms. That therefore we have to use scientific criteria in order to analyze what the textbook tells us what mind is, what spirit is, and what soul is, no matter if it conforms to our sense or if it does not conform to our sense. We have to be as objective enough to let really the scientific interpretation of the textbook define to us what these seven synonymous terms mean, and not let inspiration or meditation, or mystical pondering, give us an indication what these seven synonymous terms mean. Or we are on sandy ground. We are on wobbling ground. We have to know what being itself meant when being translated itself to Mrs. Eddy as mind, as spirit, as soul and principle, as life, truth and love. We want to know that. We want to know what being knows about mind. How being, capital B, is interpreting to us what mind is, what the seven synonymous terms are. And therefore, we have tried last year, as well as we could, to set up some rules that would help us in sticking to a scientific investigation and not to fall away from a scientific investigation and get into some kind of inspirational, meditational, mystical approach to the seven. And this is important. You can see that the whole movement of Christian Science depends on this understanding. Without this understanding, the movement cannot survive. It's no possibility. A science cannot survive that does not know its constituents. And the seven synonymous terms are the constituents of God, and therefore the constituents of Christian Science. And therefore, without knowing what they are, such a movement cannot survive. Physics could not survive until one has a clear concept of what is meant by the various physical terms. Or you would get in physics into an awful muddle. And after a short time, there would be such a muddle that would mean the end of it. So, we have to find these criteria. and I think we laid them down more or less in our rules last year. Now, Mr. Dawley never gave us those rules. When we studied with Mr. Dawley, the seven synonymous terms, we had first to find our way. As I think I told you last year, it was like going into a wilderness and try to find a way and see how we would get out of it on the other end. And through hit and miss and trial and error, we step by step could then find out the various rules that had to be obeyed and to be observed in order to really understand what the seven synonymous terms mean. Therefore, we will take these rules as, at the moment, sufficient scientific criteria on which we will measure our findings. If we don't find these scientific criteria, then we can be sure that Mr. Dawley's contribution to Christian Science will get lost. That's absolutely clear. And therefore we can only save his contribution, and therefore we can only build on sure foundation and enlarge the whole concept of the science of Christian Science if we now can see the scientific criteria that we were using without actually spelling them out. Why should we do that? As I said, I think last year, and I want to repeat it as one of the very important point is this. We should know the scientific criteria because once the movement awakes to what the science of Christian Science is, they have two chances. Either to go into a still further, deeper wilderness of confusion, or to get out of it. They will get into a still further confusion if they don't see the scientific criteria of studying the textbook. Then everyone will have its own interpretation, and everyone will have its better interpretation. Everyone will have its more inspired interpretation, and there will just be chaos. But if it is science, then the method should be scientific, and therefore we should be ready for defending our findings. We should be ready to answer all the critics about John Dawley's findings. We have now established some findings by saying can define each synonymous term through certain ideas characterizing each synonymous term. But can we defend our findings against the critics who will come along by the thousands and ten thousands and will point out in the textbook statements that apparently would defy our findings? And we can take those statements one by one during the week and see, can we actually defend our findings? If we can't, then we better pack up right now, because there is no hope for this whole science if it goes into a mystical direction, if it goes into an inspirational direction. We just can't pack up. A science is a science, and if it is a science, it must have scientific methods to defend the science of it. And there is no use to try to defend a science through mystical methods. So, what I would like to see is that each one that is here tries to culture himself to the point where they can stand up against all the criticism from wherever they come against the findings that John Dorley, at his time, through his cultured, spiritual, scientific sense, somehow has felt out. Can you say that? Has felt out? And he left it, so to say, to his later generation to substantiate it through pure scientific methods. So there is no shortcut in this study. Always students come along and say, have it to do all that study. Isn't there a shortcut? Science is easy. Science should be easy. You know, we should teach that science just as Jesus has been teaching. You see, he teaches so easy, you know. Nothing complicated. Yes. Is that true? Has anybody understood him? Was he so easy in his teaching that everybody could understand him? I don't know of many that did understand Jesus, even after 2,000 years. It's not true that one can teach science in an easy way. Science can only be taught as a science, no matter what that science is, but it has to be taught in that science. And there is no shortcut to it. There is no easy way to do it. There's just a scientific way. There is no complicated way nor easy way. There's just a scientific way, whatever that way is, but it's scientific. And we better make up our minds that we are going to choose that way and go along that way. That's why, perhaps Mrs. Eddy said, that the platoons of Christian Science must be thoroughly drilled in the plainer manual of their spiritual armament. So we better drill ourselves in the plainer manual of their spiritual armament than in another manual. Yeah. So we can see that another point which should come out of our week's work is actually that we are culturing our consciousness in this new language of the seventh synonymous term, so that more and more in a natural way we are beginning to think and feel and act and speak in the new system of reference. Yeah, all right, that's enough for introducing what we want to do. Now, take the syllabus study sheet and we read first what has been asked in the syllabus, because some students seem to have had difficulty in understanding what is asked in the syllabus. They have some difficulty in knowing what really should be the assignment. And so we take here first again a few lines so as to know what we are going to do. First of all, perhaps you make a correction. The title is Study Syllabus. Perhaps you put behind it Roman 1. Study Syllabus, Roman 1. Because the next syllabus will be Syllabus Study, Roman 2. And so when we refer back to this one as number 1, you know what it means. And we stated there very clearly the following. This syllabus presents a method of study, the seven synonymous terms for God. You see, it says that it's limited, so to say, to the study of the terms, not of the whole meaning of the seven synonymous terms. Of the seven synonyms for God. It only means the term. What means the term called M-I-N-D, called mind, with a capital M, What is that term? What does that term mean? The scope is therefore narrowed down just first to know what does Mrs. Eddy mean when she uses that funny combination of four letters, M-I-N-D. Because it means certainly something else than mind in the ordinary language. So we have to find a new meaning of a new combination of letters, so to say. And therefore, we stated here that it is only the term for God and is compiled for the sole purpose of defining, you see, only defining from the Christian Science textbook the meaning of the terms mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Can you hear what I want to indicate? We have another 4 or 5 years to come. In those 4, 5, 7 years to come, we still will talk about the 7 synonyms. But we'll talk about those 7 synonyms in quite a different way than in this week. In this week, we only want to know what is really meant by the term. It's only a question of terminology in which we are interested in the whole week. And this is super important. If we don't have clear terms, then we build on sandy ground, then we can afterwards talk, I don't know what we want to talk about, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, etc. If our terms do not mean what they should mean, then we are building on sand and it will achieve nothing. So be patient with yourself in the study. Be patient that you say it's worthwhile spending 1, 2, 3 years for the only purpose to know first what is meant by those funny 7 words. Because we do not know when we start out what they mean. We cannot get the meaning of them just by extrapolating the English meaning of these terms into a bit the diviner sense. It doesn't work. We have to discard our knowledge of the 7 terms completely and say, now I start right from scratch. What does mind mean in the way God meant it? What did God mean when God translated itself into the language of the textbook? What is that meaning? Not what is our meaning about them. And only in this way we get a divinely objective sense of what these terms mean. So, is that clear that our purpose of this week work is limited to just the terminology of those 7 synonymous terms? Once we have that, then we can begin to work with them. Next year, the year after, then we can begin to work with them. It is like an artisan at first must have his proper tools. He must have his tools and must know his tools and what the tool is for. And only then, when he has his tools, he can start with his work. Whatever he is doing. What we are doing this work is to polish our tools. If our tools are then more or less polished, then we can say, now, what can we do with those tools? How can we work with them? How do these 7 synonymous terms operate? You see? So spending just 1 or 2 years on that is not really very much. We spent not 1 or 2 years on it until we found out what the 7 synonymous terms meant. We spent at least 7 to 10 years on it just to get first a rough idea what they really mean. But at that time we were pioneering, and a pioneer always takes longer to establish something than afterwards to take other people or take students who can get along much easier. Point 1, We have stated here, the student should become acquainted with the rules that are attached for studying the conceptual meaning. Can you see, we said conceptual meaning of each of the seven synonymous terms for God. Therefore, if you think back a year or two or three ago, where we have seen that the line of development is that we first must have concept building of the terms, then afterwards we get tonality building, and then afterwards consciousness building, to the point of being building of the seven synonymous terms. So here we have only the conceptual meaning, the concept being, so that when we read life with a capital L, we know what is meant with that concept life. It may only be first a concept, and then little by little it becomes a tone that is independent of terms. And when it becomes tone, then afterwards it becomes consciousness, which then is even further freed from the tone and concept. And finally, we feel it's our being. And it's a sense of being the nature of God, of being the nature of mind, being the nature of spirit, being the nature of soul and principle. And that is then the spiritual language. So we must build up the concept of these seven synonymous terms, really, by analyzing properly what the textbook says, what are the characteristic ideas, the characteristic nature of each synonymous term. Yes, we said under that point one that these rules have been further defined during an evening session at the 1976 seminar at Asilomar and in Wilmington. Those who have not attended yet can have the tapes. I guess that you have made use of those two tapes to know how to study now the references. Point two. With the help of these rules, study at least 150 references to each synonymous term. It is, of course, to the student's benefit to study all the references. Well, I have limited to 150. I didn't want to shock the students too much, but actually what is necessary in order that you really can be a master in the tonality of the seven synonymous term, sooner or later you have to go through all the references, not only once, not only twice, not only three times, but many times, and we'll see that as we go along. Because only by exercising, only by using, applying it, you really get into the spirit of it and the tonality of it. Point three, that was the first assignment. Actually, the student should compile a list of ideas. And we said of primary and secondary importance, which can be obtained from the text of the compendiums. How? We said ideas of primary importance are printed in capital letters in the compendium. Was that clear? Or is anybody here to whom that was not clear what we meant? There were these titles in the middle of the page in capital letters and heavy type to show the ideas of primary importance. Those of secondary importance are printed in italics. You have them in the text. And then we said on your list, indent the ideas of secondary importance in order that the primary ones stand out clearly. Well, this is just a help. It should have been a help for what? And I have to talk a little bit around this very simple point. First of all, we are talking about ideas of primary importance and ideas of secondary importance. This is a risky thing which we did, because there are naturally not ideas of primary and ideas of secondary importance. In teaching, one has to take recourse to some aids, and the aid is the following. Why do we say or make a difference between primary and secondary when there aren't? Mrs. Eddy doesn't make a difference between ideas of primary importance, secondary importance. We have made that as a help. What did we mean with it? If you take an idea of primary importance that we had, for instance, as creator, that mind is a creator, well, then if we say creator, we say actually many other things that are practically of the same meaning. What did we have there as secondary importance? Well, mind is the creator. If I say creator, or if I say producer, or if I say the maker, it's actually the same thing. So if we help ourselves a little bit in arranging our notes, then if the ideas of primary importance stand out on the list and those of secondary importance are indented, then your eye can flow through the ideas of primary importance and can get the tonality of a synonym much easier than if your eye goes right down through 120 characteristics of mind and you get lost. You see the didactical help of this. It has nothing to do spiritually. And I want to bring that out, not that you think that spiritually there is a great that there is any difference between. It is a didactical help to have at least a list, say, of these big ideas which we call of primary importance, so that they stand out, that you have, so to say, for your work, that in front of you, and of secondary importance, because Mrs. Eddy uses so many ideas and characteristics, what we have indented, which are so near in meaning to the primary one, that they could only distract, actually, our thinking in terms of these big ideas. Was that clear too? Or do we have any question on that? I like to be very clear on that so that nobody comes up as a critic and says, well, Max, you are teaching here and stating here something that is not in the textbook. Mrs. Eddy doesn't say that creator is of a primary importance and producer is a secondary importance. Is that clear? It's a didactical means, a didactical help. Yes? You didn't object while you were doing it, huh? Okay. So, yeah. I want to say something else about it. What was it? Well, yeah, I want to say this, that I have been asked out in on the West Coast, what was it that gave me a criterion to state one idea as primary and what as secondary importance? I have no criteria for it, no scientific criteria. It was just, again, a didactical help. So that I used, at that time, my judgment, my spiritual judgment, to see what is primary and what is secondary. If you have, for instance, intelligence, that mind is intelligence as an idea, and you have under mind also that Mr. Seti will say that mind apprehends all and comprehends all, well, then I felt intelligence is a much bigger concept than to apprehend and comprehend. Huh? That apprehend and comprehend are really only can only be used in more specific ways than just a big idea of intelligence or of knowing. Huh? Let's say knowing. Huh? Mind knows. This is a much bigger concept than to say mind apprehends or comprehends. So I have taken from the spiritual sense, which does not need to be a criteria for you, but just was a practical mean, I have taken those ideas as being printed in capital letters, which I felt are so big in meaning that the others that are indented are somehow included in the overall tone. Yes. Is that clear too? That the judgment that I use is my personal judgment, even at that time. Today, I would even perhaps put them into a different way. And this brings me to another point which you have to know when we go through our work this week.